Alice, Mike, and Richard welcome you to the show. This won't be very pleasant, you should probably know.
This is Development Hell, so don't be surprised if you don't feel well.
That worked out great.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Development Hell. We are one of four podcasts created within the last year that chronicle the bumpy road. Sometimes a road that you race on, that truly is the pass-fail industry known as entertainment. Movies, musicals, music, movies, games, television, movies, theater, literature, anime, and movies all have a story to tell. I'm Kyle Anderson, and I'm joined by Spike Kittrell and Richard Humphrey, and we go to hell so you don't have to.
Vroom vroom. That was fantastic.
Alternate intro. Red, red line.
Directed by Kyle Anderson.
Yeah.
I just want to kiss somebody in the sky and then have the word love just get written.
Well, it's just like, oh, okay, yeah. I texted Kyle, like, if we're not going to talk about that the whole episode, then there's no point in doing this. Like, it's this weird thing of, like, what do you think I didn't get? What do you think I've missed? Because this is ending so strange. Every scene in this movie is like, it's going this long, huh? It's going to go this long? Okay, that's cool. I'm liking it, but okay.
What if at the end of Dark Knight Rises, it's Joseph Gordon-Levitt going, dude, I'm Batman.
Becomes
dude,
Batman.
Dude, I'm Batman.
Here's the thing. This movie was my second time watching this film. I think they fucking die.
No, they love. If they like died, when it would say die or dead.
Yeah, dude.
Remember
come
at
on.
The end of 12 Years a Slave where they're all hugging and it freezes and it says, back with his family. That's how you knew how that movie ended. This movie ends with love.
Right.
Why do you think they die?
I think they die because after he drops like the ultra nitro and he's like going fucking nuts right before he sees the finish line, everything fades to white and he sees that vision of like the cool racer in the limo again. And sure. I think in that moment they blow up because after that they like win this race and then they're like floating in the air and then it's love. And then all the racers, including the ones that hated them, are like, yeah.
Okay. I was going to say something to that where like this movie, the race ends and everyone's just cool with everything.
Yeah. That's why I think both of them died. And this is like JP's like ultimate vision of how this race could have ended for himself.
Fucking gnarly ass movie.
But that's
why didn't
just
it
a
say
theory,
that?
A game theory. Mm-hmm. but anyway, so today, now that we spoiled the end of the movie, we are talking about 2009's
was love
Red
killed
Line.
The beast.
It was Love Killed the Beast.
But that's just a beast theory.
Right. A Mr. Beast theory. 2009's Red Line is an action-packed Japanese sci-fi animated film that pits an over-the-top cast of racers against each other in a race at the edge of the galaxy where the only rule is anything goes.
Always the coolest only rule.
Yeah, always. I mean, whenever the rule is no rules, great rule.
Imagine if it was like, and the only rule is you gotta be nice to each other. Like,
and the only rule is just right.
Only rule, watch the face. Just dumb. Like, it's gotta be no rules. Yeah.
Only rules, wear a mask.
No smoking.
So Takeshi Koike's stylistic full-throttle love letter to fast cars, space operas, world-building, Red Line is adored by its fans and was praised by critics. But despite many thinking it's one of the best animated films of the 2000s, Red Line's seven-year production, which included over 100,000 hand-drawn frames, nearly bankrupted one of the most influential animation studios in all Japan.
Oh, that's crazy. I mean, How many can't you kind of do the math on animation and just know how many frames it's going to be?
Yeah.
The mid-2000s.
The idea, though, is, you know, a lot of anime is hand-drawn.
Right.
But a lot of anime is also, like, people in a room.
Yeah, is this right? Like one dude?
No, no, no. I'm saying like they're drawing people in a room,
oh,
or they're
I
drawing
see,
people,
I see. Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
know, fist fighting or walking down a hallway talking.
This,
where it's
yeah.
like this is lots of action,
yeah,
and if it's not
like,
action, it's tons of characters crammed into a frame that all have to be animate. You know what I mean? Like it's just an insane amount of work.
Well, like the beginning of the Little Mermaid, you know, when like that all that huge ass parade is coming through of like fish is all hand drawn. This movie is like 2 hours of that, you know.
Right.
Yeah, because that's just jam loaded with all characters. You
right
know?
After like, this, for some reason, I watched like the first episode of Teen Titans, the animated show, and it was
Teen
so
Titans Go or the Teen Titans Are Rich?
Teen Titans Stop, the original. The one where he says booyah. The thing is that like I was hyper aware of
Johnny
the,
Booyah.
I was hyper aware of how little work was put into the pilot episode of that, where like they clearly painted three backgrounds. And I think it's because yeah. I had just come off watching this thing where like everything is its own deal. That nothing was,
yeah,
all right,
I
bust
mean,
out the old, you know, this corner of that room. It's a new shot. It really is like if you had a set and you just put the camera where you wanted to put it.
Well, and Koike was like obsessed with that. And he was always like, if someone was like, well, we just don't have a background asset to do that shot, he'd be like, all right, everybody go take their lunch break. I'm not going to eat today.
Wow.
And he would just spend the next hour and a half like designing that background. And then when everyone got back from lunch, he's like, cool, now we can continue. Like,
yes.
Like he didn't do a lot of animation on this film because he was really trying to focus as a director on this one. But he stylistically infused every part of the project.
Sure.
So let's start our story by talking about the animation studio behind the film, Madhouse. Madhouse has a track record of working with amazing visionary directors very early in their careers. A lot of the best people working in the medium today got their starts from Madhouse.
Mm. Like whose? You guys are kind of anime people, right?
I am not an anime person.
Sorry.
While doing research, there were many articles that listed off four or five names. I'm not familiar with them, but the vibe I've gotten from all the research I've done is that they're very much into finding who makes like cool short films or cool OVAs are like kind of like shorts that get released on video, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, we're way bigger when VHSs were a thing, but like. A lot of OVAs were like things that would make it to America where it'd be like two episodes of something on a VHS or like just a thing made to be like a 40-minute special on a VHS or something.
Okay.
So they would find like really cool people doing those and like offer them like some work on other features and then see how they do on, cause in the animation world, there's people called key animators, for those who don't know. So a key animator would be in charge of animating like a specific sequence of a film.
Right.
Right. So like some really badass fight scene is going to be some key animator, just his job for like a year and a half is just this scene.
Damn.
Yeah, but
and
who
that
animates
happens.
The keys?
You tell me a key animated this film? basically the way it kind of works is they'll go out and find these cool people. And then have, you know, those people become key animators on other cool people's work. And then if they're really good as key animators, they'll get their own feature at
Madhouse.
That's
like kind of what Pixar does a little bit.
Right.
Know, like Pete Docter
yeah.
taking over Toy Story and then now being able to do his own thing.
And now you're seeing those like shorts that they're putting out where like the janitor, if he has a cool idea, they'll make it. Like everybody,
yeah.
at least kind of like lesser Pixar employees, not lesser, but lower ranked Pixar employees are making shorts on Disney Plus. So,
yeah, the Filipino cool. cafeteria lady has like an idea. Let's do it.
So it's kind of like Big Hero 6, right? She's just pitching.
She comes in like really nervous. I know what to do for Incredibles 3. I know what you should do for Incredibles 3.
She cracked Incredibles 3 in like a weekend.
Mr. Bird, I see that you are stressed out. I think I know what it is. I think I have your ideas.
It's like 17 years between 1 and 2, yeah, and then 4 months between 2 and 3. But here's an example of some of the work that Madhouse has done that you guys, even not being anime fans or just casual anime fans, may have heard of. Trigun, Cardcaptors, Beyblade, the Kirby animated show, Right Back At Ya, Death Note, the Maple Story anime, Hunter x Hunter, One Punch Man, Batman Gotham Knights, cool, the Supernatural anime, and the Marvel anime.
I've seen those back eds, like the Marvel anime and stuff, and a couple of those, but like, that's cool, they do those.
Is there a Kirby show called Right Back At Ya?
Yeah, Kirby Right Back At Ya.
Okay, at least it's called Kirby, right? I thought it was just like a fucking, like a sitcom called Right Back At Ya.
Right starring Back At Ya.
Based on the stand-up materials of Kirby.
Kirby and his dumb wife.
You just see like... You just see like a montage of Kirby sucking up generic like sitcom stars and then turning to the camera and spitting them out.
Right Back At Ya.
Right Back At Ya. Oh man. So
oh, that sounds cool.
Yeah, so they do a ton of work. They also do some very prestige work. Studio Ghibli often uses Madhouse as an overflow studio. They provided key animation on My Neighbor Totoro and Spirited Away, among other projects. Mm-hmm. And Madhouse consistently worked to push what was possible in animation and pioneer new techniques and try to foster voices of people that were doing things nobody else was doing in anime at the time. You know what I mean? Sort of the mm-hmm. OVA and the short scene. If they saw something that was really, really experimental, even if it wasn't super successful or good, they would be like, I think this person's going to try interesting stuff.
Sure.
So let's give them a job and see if we can draw a little more of that out of them. So they were like very important to the medium of anime.
Okay. Is Madhouse one of the big studios for anime, and is there bigger
ones? They're definitely a bigger one for sure, like with Studio Ghibli. Death Note and stuff. Studio Ghibli is sort of the big six,
right?
You know, like I looked at highest grossing anime movies and it's like a list of the Studio Ghibli movies and like a couple other really big things like sprinkled in.
It's mostly, you know, like creator based and not studio based.
Well, see, the thing is pretty much everything made in the anime system comes from being a manga, right? Like, it's actually super crazy that Redline isn't based on anything.
Well, that's not to spoil the announcement for next week's, but it's like how, like, a lot of it comes from Shonen Jump, which is sort of like a big magazine that has previews for other mangas you can buy.
Right,
so, like, a lot of the ways it's like, to discover new manga is you would read this book that has a publisher for all of these other books, and you go, oh, that one's tight, and then you can go back, go to that one, because it's directly on a shelf, and be like, I'm going to read this now.
Exactly. And so basically the way it worked was the people who have the manga shop it around to different studios to see who wants to give them a good deal on making it, you know what I mean? And they sort of partner with them. So there's, you know, a lot of times where different seasons of an anime will have different animation styles because they just couldn't get the same team again because that team was working on something else now or scheduling or whatever, you know.
Or how like Dragon Ball Z had a lot of in-house stuff where it's like the show had to be extended longer because they couldn't publish the manga fast enough because it was quicker to make a TV show. So that's why they have like all these things they call filler in anime. Sure.
A lot of episodes where they're just charging up a Kamehameha or something like that.
Or everybody's
the six episodes where he's just trying to figure out what to do with the spirit bomb.
Or it'll be an episode where somebody eats a soup and gets sick and they have to nurse Gohan back from food poisoning. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like these inconsequential episodes that like you're literally at the end, you're like, why did I watch that? Yeah. And there's actually a lot of guides. Like I got a little bit of One Piece. That was like, okay, here's all the episodes to not fucking watch. Wow. Like, these are purely a waste of time and provide nothing. Like,
yeah, like the useless like oolong episodes, you know, during yeah. the Piccolo time. Like it's
yeah. So the issue here with Redline was that pretty much no matter how much money Redline made, it stood very little chance of recouping the money that was put into it by Madhouse.
Is there a budget? I couldn't find one.
So that is one of the hardest things to source in this whole project. The number that I've seen most people cite is a budget of about 30 to 32 million and a gross of about a worldwide gross of about 8.2. Okay. So about a $20 to $22 million loss. I've also seen people say that the movie only grossed about $200,000.
Whoa. Is that possible?
It's possible. Yes. Yeah. The movie, I'll say this much. I don't want to spoil this. Do you remember that motion captured Jim Carrey Christmas Carol?
Sure.
Movie. Yeah. Okay. That movie's, Japanese re-release did better than Redline. At the box office.
The re-release.
So it's
that's unfair. How many screens?
So, you know, but you have to admit, if you're going to bankrupt your company, what a fucking blaze of glory to
go
out on.
Yeah, you go for
it right?
fucking hard.
Like, you go out on fucking Redline.
Yeah, you go fast.
Now,
it's just like, why was this guy not picked up to do like extended, like a Dominic Toretto anime or some shit, right?
Well, hey, we're gonna talk about all this.
Is there a Dom Toretto anime? Is that what we're gonna talk about?
No, but we'll get to it. lots of people compare Redline to Wacky Races or F-Zero, but many Japanese fans that enjoyed it were nostalgic for Speed Racer. And the most apt comparison in the art style is actually probably to that of Frank Miller, who was someone Koike was like obsessed with growing up. So his use of dark shadows and high contrast and bursts of color give this movie a feeling of being like a moving comic book. You know what I mean? Like when people saw this movie, they were like, oh my God, it actually looks like a manga. Like, it doesn't look like an anime.
That is true. I do agree with that.
Right, which might be why I'm, because I've never watched. I mean, Richard, do you watch anime? Do you?
Not, like, heavily. Like, I've seen, like, the big ones, and I was a big Dragon Ball Z guy, and, like, I appreciate it as an art form,
of course,
but not enough to, like, no names in the like community and stuff like that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like I've watched the big ones and I appreciate it as a medium because I think it's really cool.
But you can't.
I think it's really
drop.
Cool that they tell that their animation culture is not wants to tell every kind of story. You know what I mean? Like there's lots of animated films for adults. You know what I mean? Whereas I feel like in the West, obviously, like, the de facto is, like, it's going to be for kids. And then if it is more adult, it's like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
But it's, like, a kind of a selling point of it. You know what I mean? Whereas
I was definitely, like, thrown off anytime anyone cursed. Like, when she was naked, like, you know, it's, like, it's just something my brain, having never in my life watched a full, like, I guess with the exception of like, you know, your sausage party where the whole joke is that it's for adults, like an animated movie that's casually for adults is really
like a heavy
striking.
Metal.
Which, yeah, again, never again. These are all I mean, like and even like the Ralph Bakshi Wizards or Lord of the Rings. Those are still not those are adapting children's stories. It was so like strange and startling to see a casual movie for grownups animated like this.
Totally. And, I mean, this movie is like just packed with so much, you know what I mean? Like that's what I feel like you could really take away from looking at the art style, looking at like the character design and everything. I mean, this movie is fucking Like, they spent 7 years making it, and it looks like it.
There's no negative space at all in this movie. And
yeah, like, there's no scene that they took off. Like, it seems like the whole thing was given to the key animator.
Yeah, there's no, like, celled frame that isn't filled with something. And, like, every piece of space that has nothing in it is intentional and there for a reason and important. Because everything else is just a mishmash. And that's what's awesome when you watch about it, you know?
Any of these shows, like the TV shows, obviously, like Bob's Burgers or Family Guy can't do this workflow, but you notice it on those shows where, like, the gag is you hear something from behind a door, and so that they can get away with showing you a still image for 3 full minutes, like, they don't have to animate anything. This is like, there's never a moment of, and the simulated, like, camera, handheld, and zooms that seem like they're actually drawing those moves, not adding some effect to the
shit's like panning and scanning, you know, like
they are hand drawing. That's specifically why this movie is completely hand drawn and uses no CGI, is because he's like, if we rig these cars in CGI, I can't manipulate every line exactly the way I want to. Whereas if we draw them, I'm in complete control of how these cars look to the eye.
So, like,
you know what I mean?
The only answer to that is like a Spielberg Tintin situation, right?
Where it was
Well, because that was the eagle scene in Tintin, where like the hotel is sliding down like at the side of the island, was all basically one built out animated set that he was able to operate and manipulate every piece of, you know, and had a camera.
Right, but I think the greater
because
issue
this is hand drawn. He couldn't do that, and this is that version of it hand drawn. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think this is like Kueke being like, look, I don't even know if cameras can do what I want, but I know what it would look like if they could.
If a camera could do it. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you know. So, like, just talking about how everything is jam-packed, like, even the soundtrack, which is, like, I think, like, like fucking nuts and carries this movie. Is such a labor of love. Like, when JP is in the lead in Races, electric guitars take the lead. Crab girl, the girl is in the lead. It takes, has like these vocals that come in that are super fun. And this happens for most of the racers in the movie. Kuike said, I think music determines half a movie's image. And to put in perspective how much work they did, the soundtrack is 42 tracks. This is a 101 minute movie.
Well, it's like when I found out that Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross made like 3 hours. The Gone Girl soundtrack is 3 hours. And Gone Girl is not.
Amazing. Yeah, I love that. So Kuike is kind of a master. And while being a 20-year veteran of the industry, Redline was his first feature film. He fell in love with animation after seeing Galaxy Express 999 in the theaters in 79. From that transformative viewing, he knew he wanted to make movies like that one day. And right out of high school, he started to work at Madhouse, getting the worst jobs on their lowest budget movies, but proving himself and working his way up through the studio.
It's the Peter Jackson method.
Totally. He's totally got a Peter Jackson vibe. However, he finally got to showcase his style with directing the opening, an animated opening, to the live-action film Party 7. So I'm going to send the opening of Party 7 in the chat. So this was a Madhouse film that was live-action. So you'll see right away the Redline style coming through.
Yeah.
Just sort of in the movement and the shadows and the way he,
Everybody is Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah. The way he portrays everyone, you know what I mean?
Everyone is attached to the Speed Force is what it felt like, you know?
Totally. Yeah. Totally. Totally. But yeah, you can like jump around through that and just see. So that's how they introduce all the characters in this live action movie. So with being able to have that strong of a visual style, with sort of, this is like the first sequence he ever got to like key animate. Like he got, he was like completely in charge of directing this little sequence.
That's an attention getter.
And yeah, it wowed some people at the studio. And he sort of continued this reputation of like, he was the guy you brought in when you wanted an animated sequence to have speed and velocity.
Speed, right? Velocity, and hot babes.
Okay.
So this is so good at babes.
I need to ask about, is this, as someone who's never seen anime, is this that thing about anime that everyone talks about? Or is it like self-aware joking about anime being over-sexualized? Or is it just
traditionally
over-sexualized? Okay. Because it's like, it actually seems like it's a good joke when she's like, oh my God, the crass things on TV. And then she sits down and her huge tits are out. And I'm like, well, that might be a joke. And then it goes into 5 minutes about how these two drivers are just the fucking horniest, thirstiest bitches on the road.
I think it's just one of those things of like, it's almost like just a staple of the medium in a weird way. Like, sure. I don't approve of it, but like, they kind of just have to make sure young Japanese boys watch it, I guess. I don't know.
Okay.
We're just so repressed white American males. That's
we don't
all.
Get it. Almost all his work as a key animator for Madhouse stands out as being some of the most bombastic and kinetic parts of those movies or shows. So giving him his own where it could fully capitalize on that energy felt like a natural fit for Madhouse executives.
Hell yeah.
Like basically this guy has like knocked out of the park every,
there's no way
every,
it's bad.
Yeah. Every assignment he's been given, there's no way he's not going to crush this. So it was around this time that he started getting compared to Yoshinori Kaneda. Now Yoshinori Kaneda is like, how do I describe him?
He's a sushi place in Toronto.
He's
a kind of battery like that's really hard to find.
No, he's like a, he's like Poochie of the anime world. Like people fucking love this guy. Right? Like when Kaneda's not on screen, you should be asking, where is Kaneda?
Oh, Poochie.
he's
fucking Poochie.
He's like always like smoking a cigarette and like wearing sunglasses and just being like the coolest guy in any room.
Sure.
And he is like, if you asked anyone who's like making big anime right now who they looked up to, they would be like, oh, Yoshinori Kaneda for sure.
If there's one thing I'm never gonna fucking trust, it's big anime. I'm gonna fucking trust big anime, all right? No.
But aside of being one of the coolest figures in anime directing, he was also known for breaking down the directorial system in animation, allowing individual key animators to exert their own style into a particular work. So up until this point, it was seen as like very disrespectful to try to put your own style or spin in somebody else's thing. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of the first person to be like, no, I hired all these people who I think are really talented and bring something unique to the table. And I want them to bring that.
He's like a Scott Rudin where like, I'm going to bring you in and protect you and like, let like really be like, you are the, you know, whatever the Wachowskis, Fincher, you're going to,
cause he's like, I'm already a legend. I just want to let other people build into legends.
Awesome.
You know what I mean? Like, so he was just like and is like smoking a cigarette while he says this and like wearing sunglasses with like his arm around a model, you
just
know, he's
like just picturing Han in Fast
yeah,
and
he literally is Han
eating peanuts
like,
sitting against a car.
Gina said the same thing when I told her about it. She's like, oh, so he's Han. He's just the coolest.
Well, Han is just Korean Brad Pitt.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. He's just doing Ocean's 11 Brad Pitt for
the
six
whole
movies,
time.
And we are all so happy about it.
So,
and the guy who killed him, he's family too.
And Yoshinori Kaneda, is actually the very same director that made Galaxy Express. the movie that like inspired him. And if you watch the Galaxy Express trailer, a lot of like the geometry of the buildings and stuff, you can see, you're like, oh yeah, that is that definitely inspired our boy for like the way he draws cities.
A lot of my fucking triangles. Yeah.
So it's like, basically he's being, compared a lot to Kaneda at this time. Now Kaneda was also a frequent collaborator of Miyazaki. And I just have to read you guys this Miyazaki quote about Kaneda. Cause it's literally the best thing you'll hear all day.
Well, I really want to try this, Galaxy Express 999 premium craft beer. That's for sure.
I really want to try the Ninja Foodie SP101 toaster oven.
Hey, let me tell you, this past year, I've really learned the benefits of carbonated water.
Yeah, Richard and I both watched this on like free with ad services, and we're bombarded with weight. Like, this was a 3-hour movie for us.
Absolutely.
Let me tell you, there's a talking turtle in Snoop Dogg, and they're selling soda streams, and that man used to sell drugs.
And let me tell you, the difference between the Ninja Foodie SP100 and SP101 is that the 101 has the dehydrate function.
I hate you. I hate you so much. Like,
do you know how many bottles of water you save by using a soda stream?
None. Yeah, because I don't drink soda.
Do you know how much space you save when you can flip your Foodie Ninja SP101 up into the up position? It's the only food cooker that crisps while it flips or some dumb shit it says a bunch of times.
You know what? If you don't want to save the turtle, Snoop Dogg's oldest friend, I don't know what you want.
And if you want to burn your hand going back in to flip it, then you're losing skin on your hand. I don't know what to tell you.
So Miyazaki had this to say about Kaneda.
I got a heart out. No time for bits.
He had this to say about Kaneda.
Does the Ninja Foodie have a rotisserie function?
No, it doesn't. The SP-102 does. Kyle is on fire. Kyle, he's like, I just got the dog to stop making noise.
Red line. So Miyazaki had this to say about Kaneda. When I first laid eyes on Kaneda, as I watched him go-go dancing amid the fracas of youthful animators letting loose, I thought to myself, now this guy's the real thing. I already suspected him to be the real thing, but the way he shook his little booty with zealous abandon that night only confirmed my suspicions.
Beautiful.
a legend talking about that another legend.
That is how I talked about Spike the day I saw him rap numbers.
Yeah, when I debuted 247. You know, I still know every word to that song.
Me too.
Yeah, no, it's an instant. You want a song that gets stuck in people's heads right away.
Yeah, of course. So basically, this is to say that Kuike was being compared to the big dogs, right? Like, people were thinking, like, he is, let's give this guy a feature because the word on the street is, like, he might be the next Kaneda, right?
Like if I made a commercial and someone goes, "You're the next Spielberg."
If you made a commercial and they were like, "I think you're the next turtle, dude."
Yeah.
Snoop Dogg's oldest friend.
You're the new Snoop Dogg's oldest friend. Now in the commercial, is he Snoop Dogg's oldest friend because they live so long?
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense. Then.
That's good. Oh, so it's not his
Snoop Dogg's oldest homie.
Yeah, it's not his oldest friendship. That guy is, that turtle is his friend who is the oldest.
That's what I'm to believe.
He's not friends with any other 130 year
olds. No, he met this turtle the day he was born, and everyone else from that day is dead.
Yeah. Well, they're twins. He was born 2 minutes before the turtle.
Well, that's the thing is that, like, Snoop Dogg's like an ancient salt god. And there's nothing we can do about it.
I'm sorry. I know we haven't even started making the movie, but we're not asking, why was there a turtle in the soda commercial?
Because do you know how many bottles of water you save by using a soda stream?
Okay, I'm sorry.
And then you won't be using straws probably. And you're right. You know, turtles hate those.
You're in position to save counter space, and you can cook your food just as fast. Tell me about the movie.
Dude, that $2.99 rental on Amazon was the best money I've ever spent in my life.
I kept looking around going, can I pay $3 for no ads, not thinking about renting it?
Like, yeah, no,
but like app-mindedly.
I started playing on Tubi and it was playing at 720p and I saw it had about 15 ad breaks and I went, you know, I'm going to treat myself better than this.
You said, to be fair, it's pretty cheap.
Let's see. So
IMDb, nice to me, Richard.
In 2003, he directs a segment in the animated Matrix anthology, Animatrix, entitled World Record.
Oh, he did World Record?
Yeah. Quote, hey. I studied a lot of running in slow motion. I found that making the hands rather than the legs swing up with a very strong impact makes the animation quite realistic. So this is him like watching like months of like every slow motion video he can find of a person running.
So yeah. If you guys haven't seen that short, it's about a guy who runs so fast he breaks out of the Matrix.
Whoa.
Which like That's makes sense with like his sense of velocity and stuff like that, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. And that was sort of like the anthology had a lot of like big dogs in the industry on it too. Woof woof. He was able to stand out even among notable names, being like kind of the unknown person. If you were someone, a big anime fan, you threw on the anthology, you'd be like, oh, they got him and him and him and who? And then you watch his segment, you were like, well, that one kind of actually ripped.
Well,
you
that know? Was like there's articles about like that one being like the one that's like, oh, like there's all these good ones, but that one right there is really? The one to
that's
watch.
That's awesome. Yeah. I got to check out Animatrix.
And that one was written by the same guy who wrote Redline.
Okay.
So they were like, again, he got the writing job and then he was like, yo, you know who should really direct this one? My boy Koike.
Awesome.
And this also gets him some attention from like outside the studio. But this isn't the thing that gets Redline made. The thing that gets Redline made is a little movie called Kill Bill.
Hell yeah.
So Ishii, who was the director of Party 7, but was also an animator, said, when I was in the middle of editing Taste of Tea, I also did some work on Kill Bill. Tarantino really loved Japanese animation, so he assembled a bunch of Japanese animators. I did the character designs. There was some vague chatter at the time of, we could do this kind of anime in Japan too, you know. At that time, Kimura said to me, if we want to make something cool like Kill Bill, maybe Koike is the only one who could do it.
Hmm.
So then, like, now people are being like, and this guy might be the guy.
And this is for the Oren Ishii, like, flashback scene in the first Kill Bill. Okay.
Yeah.
The best part of the movie?
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
And this is, like, that team working on that, right? So awesome. One of the biggest ways he captures his sense of speed is by using the depth of field and those lens distortion methods. Mm-hmm. Right. But this led to, of course, the juiciest detail about that movie is that over 100,000 frames of animation were hand drawn. Other than a few particle effects, like when the confetti is falling, they decided they couldn't hand draw millions of pieces of confetti and everything else.
You just fucking kill yourself.
So do you think the love was hand drawn?
Yeah, with the love hand drawn, Kyle.
Was actually, it? You know, that might
that actually might have been
CGI.
That
shit looks
CGI
as fuck.
Yeah. Now, basically, like I said, everything was hand drawn because Koike wanted to be able to manipulate every line in the picture in very precise ways, and he didn't feel like computer animation at the time was capable of giving him this kind of freedom.
Were the cars hand drawn?
Yes.
What about the people?
replacing cars with CGI is actually pretty common in anime.
What about the cars that were people?
Right. That's a real question. I thought that was
that's
just
a real
bit,
question in this movie. But you know, for about the last 10 or 15 years, apparently like cars in anime being CGI has been very common. And basically
they kind of have to be three dimensional, right? Isn't that and, like, and you have right. to get so many weird angles of it.
Now the issue behind this and why the CGI came to prevalence with vehicles specifically is because finding draftsmen who can draw a car beautifully is very difficult. And then you have to do it 10,000 times at every conceivable angle.
There's a weird like,
style
symmetry yes. to a car that is really like hard to draw that like,
it's really, really fucking hard.
Like I feel like this movie is constantly tracking every piece of dirt that hits the car.
Yes.
So like you're never just drawing the car. You're drawing the right. car plus whatever just happened to it.
And just like then you're thinking of all the different camera warps and the how would this piece yeah, of yeah. engine look yeah. on this edge of the camera, and you know what I mean? Like it's all of this
and it's
very,
also
very
like,
intense work.
Like how does everything have to react when a cannon is also an eyeball that's coming out of a vagina, you know?
Yeah, like, that it isn't literal to do this all and it's not literal like that. Yeah, you're right. That you're like, I have to draw a car, but also it has a face and guns.
Yeah.
And it's so, and I have to portray that it is going 300 miles an hour through the ground.
So they
that's
said
not
this.
Fair.
They said this.
While driven by underwater twins.
Yeah,
I love them
real
so much.
Rascals.
This is a quote. CGI was not common when we started the project. When we started working on Red Line, most cars were hand-drawn. But by the time we finished the film, it was actually a selling point that we didn't use any CGI on the cars. So they were in production for so long yeah. that it like a new method happened and went out of vogue
That's
in
awesome.
The time. So they actually created
it's like
plastic.
When you fucking find out that while they were shooting Full Metal Jacket, a man met his wife, married her, and had a baby before they wrapped.
The baby's like working in craft services.
Yeah, yeah. Give that shit. Give that baby an umbrella. Just stand near the camera operator.
So they actually created plastic models of all the cars for reference. So there's some really cool behind the scenes videos where you can see like toy versions of them all laid out on a table, like during the race where they're like, okay. And then this slides past, you know what I mean? They're like playing with it. Like you see that with like, I think it was like Nolan where he's like playing with the, he's got like
the
a little Batman
tumbler.
On a motorcycle and yeah, he's got, yeah, exactly. I always love that shit.
Yeah.
But basically all of this led to not only, you know, the cars looking incredible, but these extremely fluid character animations and very, very satisfying and kinetic fight scenes. Quote, "We totally deviated from the original schedule," Ishii said with a laugh. "Madhouse gave us about 2 years, but we ended up taking a little over 7.
Yeah, you got to stretch it. You got to see what they'll let you do.
You had to stretch now, it like they do cars.
When yeah.
Because cars are like Laffy Taffy. Everything turned into like the Batmobile from Michael
Guys,
Keaton.
It is so unbelievable. We're not talking too much about the movie itself, but like I texted you guys. I think that this movie is really incredible, but absolutely peaks 15 minutes in. Like that is the fastest anything has ever looked on screen. Is that final stretch at the yellow line race where his fucking eyes start bleeding and like everything feels so unstable, which you never see in racing where like they hit the nitrous and suddenly the cars can't handle it for at first.
They're like
before
fucking
they take
shaking
off.
And freaking out.
I know,
yeah.
It's just like it's so
for
it's so nuts, dude. It's so stressful that first 15 minutes where like this dude is fucking dealing with
but
this
But I love how that movie is just like, hey, if you like this first 15 minutes, you're going to like the rest of this movie.
Yeah,
and
we're
you
not
don't,
even done.
Get out. This yeah, is what this is sure. doing, though. It's awesome.
It's like pilots wear all these suits and have all these countermeasures and have to figure out how to breathe once they go to a certain speed, you know? Like everything, what, like, it, this, like, show is really addressing the fact that what if you were just a dude in a fucking car who went that fast?
All these characters seem like they might faint.
Yeah, it's totally. it fucking hurts him every time he goes fast.
Yeah, for sure.
So now, when I say this movie had a 7-year production cycle, I mean 3 years of pre-production, which included like mountains and mountains of character designs. This is why like nobody has like looks like a weird background character. Like you could almost pluck any character out of the background and he could be like the main character of an anime. You know what I mean?
Like fully fleshed out.
Everyone is like super well designed. All the different races on the different planets and the dog people and the, you know what I mean? Just like,
it's like they basically did what apparently James Cameron's doing where he maps out 4 movies in one pre-production meeting. The same way where like they're ready for whatever spinoffs might be necessary for Redline.
Yeah,
they're ready for the 6 Disney Plus shows.
So we'll get to that in a second. So this is 3 years of pre-production and then 4 years of actual production. So the pre-production was a little bit more flexible, but the 4 years of production were 360 days a year from 8:30 a.m. to 10:30 p.m. with a team of only 15 people.
Yo, that's not okay at all, though.
None of them are friends anymore.
Yeah.
For sure.
None of them were friends like a year in.
Here's the thing. They were and they are.
They were all brothers.
This is the this is the ultimate opposite of L.A. Noir, where these people were like working their fingers to the bone day in and day out, loving it.
That's
like
awesome.
Being like, we are making the coolest motherfucking anime ever. Like,
oh, man.
Everyone was just wrong. Like stoked. They believed in their leader and they just came to work happy every day, got to do cool ass shit all day long and go home and just like... Everybody who worked on it is just like, it fucking owns.
That
like
said,
it rips.
They are all going home at 10 p.m. being like, baby, he's got 4 arms and a mustache. It's the best. We drew him taking a step today and it was really, really cool. We got pizza. We got booze. It's a lot of fun. I'm tired.
Oh, man.
No, I wasn't at the recital. It's fine.
Yeah. You filmed it, right? Phones exist now that we've entered year 3 of production.
I can't remember what...
Quick, get out your Motorola Quicktel or something.
Yeah.
So here's like another tip or just like another quick thing of like what a maniac he is with animation. So if you do slow motion in animation, typically it's animated on threes, right?
Yes.
So you basically
every
repeat
third frame
each image.
Movement.
Yeah, you basically repeat every image 3 times in a 24 frame sequence. He animates on ones in slow motion.
Yeah.
So that's why everything is like every person when they're just standing there and smoking a cigarette, like the movements in their head and everything just have this
just
like fluidity.
Digging their fingers into their fucking mouth while they're talking.
Dude, that
to
scene though is so good.
That's the kind of thing where like it's an interesting choice that an actor would have made.
Yeah.
You know, like everyone's making these like
it's a very Eric Roberts-y thing,
but like a key animator is getting to do that. Yeah, it's a key animator is getting like autonomy over that scene to be like, oh, he should just be digging in that fucking mouth.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
just hitting those back gums.
How about that's how we introduce you to this character? Is that
then when you see him again, someone else is doing it for him.
yeah,
letting you know this is what this guy does.
Third time, so, clean mouth. Full of fear, though.
Yeah, full of fear.
But
so speaking
worry,
to speaking to what you were talking about, Spike, with building out that world, Redline actually has a prequel film 2001's Trava : Planet Fist, which follows Trava and Shinkai. If you remember Trava, he's the guy who's like getting his ass kicked by the dude who's crying. And Shinkai is like the lobster guy who comes and eats the food, and how it kind of introduces them like they're really something because they're the main characters from his OVA.
It's like Han and fucking Tokyo Drift.
Exactly. So they bring them in as like this cool thing. And Planet Fist is basically about like Trava and Shinkai trying to get into this like tournament called the Planet Fist, where it's like a fighting tournament where you fight in mechs because they're like trying to get the prize is like what they're after. And they meet like this giant and this other girl. And like, it's just kind of like a cool, weird space opera thing. It is much like, if you watch it, if you look at any of it, it is like, here, I'll send it in the chat real quick. It definitely has the same visual style. Like, you can definitely see, like, oh, this is definitely this same team. But there's no sense of movement or, like, life or that sort of energy that all of Kuike's past work had, right? His other stuff. So that's what they spend these 7 years really trying to hone, is like, let's take something that looks this cool with this cool of world building and fucking like just push it over the edge.
Well, and you know, this all reminds me, this even so much of the design of this almost feels like, it reminds me so much of Jamie Hewlett and like 90s British punk art. Mm-hmm. And specifically Hewlett's really early Tank Girl stuff of like, you know, the kangaroos and things, of these long weird creature, like normal animals plus a nuclear bomb plus 500 years. And, and all these weird, like pastel color, it looks like vibrant animation colors filmed with old film. So everything has that muted look to it too. But yeah, it was surprisingly, it feels so Western and it really, really reminded me of Jamie Hewlett.
Yeah, I mean, Kiet Seto, the film's character designer, said that their visual theme behind the scenes was information overload. Right. So they knew the film was only going to work if it was an all out visual assault.
Yeah. If it sure. was, you know, like what Blade I mean? Runner, like, you know, where it's
it had to just fucking hit you over the head with, this is the world. This is what's happening. Here's a race. You're going to crash. It's fucking intense. Yeah. And then it'll like, you can be along for the ride. And so that's why they were like, even when the movie gets less crazy, like when they're out of the race, they still wanted, from a design standpoint, to just, but you know, nobody can go in a normal looking building. It has to be an insane, the building has to be as crazy as the races we're doing.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, everything has it. And there's so much cool shit. Like when the guy on Robo World like interfaces with the giant satellite and it's like that black brick thing that comes around his head. And there's just so much cool shit that they do from a design standpoint. That's like, man, that could be a whole movie.
When like the just army Robo of World's like cars, when they're like, go, and they shoot down these slides, and then they should like get into their weird zipper cars, and they like, it looks like it hurts. You love them too.
Zipper cars, yeah.
Like, it all looked like it fucking hurt.
However, the film, while made with love and stuffed with so much artistry, it failed to deliver at the box office. Like I said, it was a $8.2 million earned versus a budget of 32. A lot of people say that Kieko was fired from Madhouse because of this. However, I found conflicting reports, cause he continued to work at Madhouse for 6 or 7 more months. But I think he wasn't excited to work for the new owners. So basically Madhouse went bankrupt after this movie came out and got bought by this like super, super corporate TV, like Japanese TV conglomerate, right? And they were sort of like, hey, it's been really cool how you've like been into like supporting new artists and stuff, but like, what if we just did TV and adaptations? And so that's where you get like you know, your Batmans and your, you know, your Death Notes and your supernatural anime Marvel and all that anime, sort of stuff. Yeah. And all the original, like the creators of Madhouse, sort of exit the company at that time.
It's like you said, you know, this production went through while this happened and they kept their blinders on. The world went through these shifts, and by the time he was done, it's similar to how, like, you know, Robert Downey Jr. is where he was. Iron Man happens, changes everything. He's now trying to make movies in the world he created, and he can only make fucking Doolittles and Sherlock Holmes exactly because of himself.
Right, because of him, yeah.
Yeah, and it's this so other thing of, like, yeah, this guy goes in when this studio is like, we're going to make all the weird stuff. And then 2009, 2010 comes around, and it's like, sorry, dude, what we do now to keep the lights on is Spider-Man, but anime, or this supernatural, you know?
Right. It's like, what if Wolverine was like a skinny, hot dude with a red leather jacket? Right?
Well, now,
like,
hold on, people. Hubba, 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 hubba. So you know that's not making it in.
Yeah,
that's an amazing story, but that's not gonna make it.
Yeah, we're gonna have to cut that. So we just cut out a story that I don't think we could publish, but, and you know, maybe
we'll be on Criterion soon.
Oh boy, oh boy! Now, Spike making more work for himself. All this, basically. So really, I think it came down to Koike didn't really have any interest in doing what Madhouse was gonna go forward with doing. Like, I really don't think he wanted to just direct, like, cookie cutter TV episodes. Like, he's kind of not the kind of guy that could be happy doing that.
He can't just be an employee.
Right. No, he has to be like an auteur. Yeah. And so he basically, you know, after spending 7 years on Redline and being at Madhouse since he was a literal teenager.
Yeah.
He was really ready to move on. And actually at the premiere of Redline, he got asked to take over the Lupin the Third series because those executives were like, fuck, dude, he just spent 7 years on his last movie. If he signs on to something, he might be on it for another 7 years. Lupin the Third. It's like a very famous anime detective series.
Okay.
About this detective called Lupin
they
and like his team.
They did a new one recently, right?
They just did like a big CGI one. I don't believe he animated that one, but he does like the anime.
Wow. I'm glad I asked, cause I thought it was a show called The Loop. And he was being brought on for the third series.
No, Lupin the Third.
Got it.
Yeah, it was one that like aired a lot on like Toonami and Adult Swim and stuff. Dude,
I've been thinking about that little robot guy lately.
He's just like,
he's great. Tom?
I've always thought of it from like in imagery as like an anime national treasure. And that like national treasure was trying to like capture like Lupin the Third.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, so it was just, it's kind of like, it's almost like Japan's like, imagine like a fun, like slightly comedic James Bond who has like a fun crew that he always runs with.
Yeah, it would be like
this guy's a samurai and this guy's really good at kicking and this chick's hot and she uses it.
Knives like, out the anime, you know?
Yeah. Kind of like Knives Out the anime vibe, like every time it's Lupin, one of Lupin's adventures, it's just like, oh, he's going to get into some crazy mystery, and then him and his crew are going to have to, like, figure out their way out of it and fight their way out.
I said
whatever,
detective,
right?
So like, okay. But I meant Master Thief.
So it's like a Sly Cooper.
Is he
Cooper.
A Master Thief?
It's like a Sly Cooper type of
He's the
type of
Gentleman
situation.
Thief.
Okay, Gentleman Thief. So there you go. But yeah, so Madhouse, God, there's a Lupin fan who's just been screaming
Welcome
for the last
back.
Time.
I know, like,
on the third episode. Like, all I did is Google Lupin the Third, and we are wrong so about everything.
Madhouse being taken in this much more corporate direction, the original founders left the company because, quote, there was a, quote, new soulless vision.
Quantum soulless vision.
Yeah, so the studio would refocus on these TV projects instead of feature films. And Redline would actually largely mark the end of anime studios taking this type of a risk on a project so outside of anything else being made and not based on an established IP. So this literally has not happened since Redline. Cool. Like everything that has come out has been either an established IP or a new, like something that wasn't based on something, but was so similar to
right.
a successful thing.
Or with the exception of maybe, the Miyazaki stuff, but that itself is almost a franchise, like where like that,
right. yeah. that is Studio yeah. Ghibli is like the it's exception.
Every doesn't,
role.
It doesn't count.
And like, really it's them catering to like Western audiences a lot in a weird way too, where it's well, like, it's like all we want is like, well, what we wanted like movie versions shows. Of the yeah. animes, you know? And it's like that. Yeah. And there have been other original animes that come through and there's never anyone there at like the theaters.
But just the thing is like, like when you think about how obsessed the West is, like you like to think that the West is obsessed with like established IP, but like, the anime industry is way more obsessed with establishment, like everything yeah. that, you know what I mean? It's like so rare that something is not established on anything else, even TV. You know what I mean? Like to not even have TV shows that, you know, almost all their TV shows are based on books.
Well, like Lupin yeah, the Third just, is a manga series.
Yeah, it absolutely.
Follows the escapades of Master Thief Arsène Lupin the Third, the grandson of Arsène Lupin, the gentleman thief of Maurice LeBlanc's series of novels. See, even that's from a book.
Right.
So the mangas.
Matt LeBlanc wrote. Yeah,
Matt LeBlanc. Matt he wrote LeBlanc the
third
is,
season of
well,
Loop.
No, he's his grandpa. He's his
okay. Yeah. So Matt Lupin LeBlanc's is Matt LeBlanc's wrote grandpa. The first season of The Loop. Is
yes.
what you're telling me. Okay. Wow, that's cool.
Wait, that like so, like Fox is The Loop.
I just love Friends trivia. I mean, that's just cool. That's just cool.
It's just fun. I watched a whole video essay about how Chandler Bing was supposed to be gay, and they like straighted him in the first like three episodes of Friends.
Could I be anymore in the closet?
Yeah, they spend the rest of the episode being like, why is he not gay?
There is that episode where like, nah, he's gay.
Yeah, they do that. Yeah. They did that once a season.
So Kuike said that while no plans have ever come to any serious stages for a sequel to Redline, that he has an idea for a sequel.
Woof, woof.
But he thinks...
What if Cars had the chalk?
No. This is for Richard. This is for Richard specifically.
Green Line.
No. Red Line 2, he thinks would only work as a video game.
Yes, it would. Yes, it would. Initial D has such a good life as a video game.
But then how does he have any of the control he wanted over a video game?
Great question.
Maybe the point is a loss of control, and maybe it's like or forcing somebody to.
Oh, get it's some an sort of kink thing with him.
Yeah,
I think he the thing is he has ideas for like
you play this game. No
I think
control.
He wants to do like animated cutscenes that he would have control over, but I think that he. I get the sense that he wants to tell a much more like. Like he kind of didn't like after spending years and years and years of like creating all these characters that like at the end of the day, JP still had to win. You know what I mean? Cause it's like, it sounded like he got really into Lich Man and Johnny Booyah.
Who wouldn't? Who wouldn't?
Well, I know what you mean that he's like, well, in this we can actually put it in the text, every piece of information about these people, because you can go up to them and like, learn three
well,
things
or
and
it
do
could
a
be
side
like
quest
if you play
them.
Through the game as Lich Man and you win the game, there's a like canonical ending that would make sense.
Sure.
So I think he wants to tell like 7 or 8 movies that are smaller, and so he's like, I think that would just work as a video game.
Okay.
You could play through the different chapters.
Sure.
But these days, Ishii and Kuike are still making anime together. Since 2014, they've been working on the long-running Lupin the Third franchise, and they share most of the same creative staff as Redline, so almost everyone from that 15-person team. Oh. Like that's why I said they're all still buddies.
They were so young
they're
back then, too.
Still working together.
They can
so
make
they've
a video
made three
game.
Of these features. Since 2014, they've made 3 of them, and they're still working on more.
And do they have this vibe?
Yeah, they just all still like each other a lot. Like they're just awesome. All big collaborators. I mean, Ishii, when he first worked with Kuike on that Party 7, like when Kuike brought in Party 7, the intro, and showed it to him,
yeah.
he literally said, I never want to make a movie without this kid again.
Whoa, that's so cool.
That's
and he hasn't.
I haven't heard of a love like that since seven people haven't stopped playing the same game of tag.
God damn it. I like at the end of that movie when you see everyone just looks like an alt-right uncle who like screams at you on Facebook. Like at the end of tag, all the real people just look problematic.
All the real people voted for Trump.
So here, before we wrap up,
so you just see the fake surveillance ones. You just see like a guy tag another guy at the Capitol.
Oh, sir, so we weren't rioting, we were playing tag.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm Ed Helms.
This is tag for my family.
Yeah. this is tag for the people.
Before we cross the finish line, I thought...
No, that was good.
I thought we'd end with one fun fact that I learned while researching this movie.
Is it about friends?
That during the whole time, seven people played the same game of tag?
kind of. That the working title of 2001's Fast and Furious, almost all the way up until release, was Redline.
Yeah.
And in fact, the behind-the-scenes DVD, like, making of the first movie is called Slate. Making Redline.
The Slate has Redline on it.
Yeah, and everyone in the movie, like Vin Diesel being interviewed, is like, oh, Redline's just an incredible racing movie. and so it's really funny to hear like Paul Walker be like, I'm just so excited about Redline. These, you know, we're going so fast.
Yeah, man. we're just going fast, man. Redline. Too Redline, too Furious. Too Red, too Line.
What do you mean we can't use Redline?
Red 7, Line 8.
L9, the Line Saga.
What do you mean I can't use Redline? That I'm furious so fast. Wait.
And I want to talk about the thing I just said out loud.
So yeah, guys, that is...
You can have any line you want as long as it's red.
Show me who you are. Show me how you drive. I'll show you who you are.
That's my favorite cringy Fast and Furious quote is, you know what they say where I come from? You show me how you drive. I'll show you who you are. Oh, man. But yeah, that's Koike's Redline, probably the fastest movie ever.
Oh, man. So fast.
That ripped.
So motherfucking fast. Really,
awesome stuff, Kyle.
What are you guys' like closing thoughts on Redline? And I'll pose this to you. Was it worth it? Because to me, I'm saying, fuck yeah, baby. Put him in a room for seven more years. lock the door. make another one.
Yeah, it's worth it. And it's also like you lock him in a door for 7 years and they make a video game. And that's about the amount of time that a video game takes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like they could do it. I'm all for the video game.
I mean, yeah, you picture shaving off a year of both, like, the pre-production and then the production. It's just, like, you immediately lose what is immediate. The thing is that this movie immediately shows you exactly what they spent that time on. Where the very first shots, and it's so quiet, too, you know, and it's like, well, the race is about to start. Oh, okay. And it's so cinematic, and you're just so quickly, like, this operates like a camera crew is there. This feels like actors make decisions. Camera operators make decisions, like DPs.
In a way that you rarely get from a animated
film.
It
felt also like that everything had a skeleton.
Yeah.
It's like even cars had a skeleton and like a sort of an organic structure to it. Well, and like that's what made like a lot of fluidity was it was just like it's because everything was fluid in that way. And that's something that I really appreciate and love. And I think the art style in itself is just sort of like my jam, baby.
And there's this impressive element, too, of like nothing, you know, it would be easy if you're replicating a camera's look to have things fall out of focus, you know. And thus, you don't have to draw so-and-so in the nosebleeds that much. Nothing is out of focus. It's all, like, deep focus for the most part. So there's never a moment. There's never, like you said, Kyle, there's never an easy shot. It's just everyone head home or go to lunch, come back. We will have this new car or whatever.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it's a beautiful face to God.
It's wild. It's wild that, like... They spent so much time making that anime that they missed the term toyetic.
Yeah, they goofed on that.
Like it happened and went away during that time of like, how many toys can we make out of something? Because this thing had so many toys, you know?
Yeah, all the cars could have been toys. I mean, all the little, like I said, if you look up that video, the behind the scenes, like all the toys they had of the cars were really cool.
But look, it just, all it needs is like to go up on Netflix and catch fire and spend 6 months as the thing everyone is rewatching for those toys to reappear for some, you know, 4-episode HBO Max show to appear. This thing is still, as much as it's a cult status now, like, it is sitting to become, waiting to become, like, a big deal for people, even Western audiences.
Well, it's like, even, the imagery itself is what everyone's into right now, sort of. Mm-hmm. That is what's hip. Is everything that it is about is sort of, like, where we're at.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I know that it was on Netflix for, like, a year. But it just didn't catch fire, and I really hope that in a year or so it can get back on there, and a lot of people experience it and give it a shot, because I think if it just starts auto-playing that fucking crazy-ass race...
I agree.
You know, it's like people will be in. But yeah, I hope it gets more of a cult following. If you haven't seen Redline, you should definitely watch it, because it's fucking fantastic.
Rent it so that you don't have to watch it for free through Amazon on IMDb TV.
Yeah. It is sitting on YouTube, but throw the man some bucks.
Yeah, Kuike could use the scratch.
Well, I hope he got my ad dollars.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you want to see this SodaStream ad, watch it on IMDb TV. And if you want to see the Ninja Foodie SP101, you can check it out on Tubi. But until then, Richard, what are we... We're still doing Vroom Vroom Month, Racy Car Month. What are we calling this month? It's not
Go Fast.
Easy, what is it?
Go Fast
Month. Go Fast
Month.
Go Fast,
yeah. So for Go Fast Month, I was thinking about, you know, it's just like, I want to get my kicks on, you know, like life really is sort of a highway when you think about it. I'm going to go with Speed Racer.
Wait, no.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say cars.
We were about to fucking walk.
Like, are we doing Lassiter next week? Jesus.
I was like, man, I'm not going to have anything to pick.
The Lassiter of us.
Fuck you.
No, I'm going to do the Wachowskis' Speed Racer.
Fuck yeah. Excited. I haven't seen it in a long time.
And with my tradition of starting with a hella old cartoon and working my way forward.
I know, yeah. Another movie where the first 20 minutes are exhaustingly perfect.
Yeah, we're gonna get into it, baby. I'm excited.
All right, y'all.
We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening, demons.
What if we call it Let's Talk About Race Month?
No, I think no. No, guys, no, the intro music's already playing. You guys have to just say goodbye now. The outro music is already going.